This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Hello, and thanks for joining me today. I'm medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and the topic for today's show is the hidden meaning behind autism, and it was actually a suggestion from listener Lynn Winters, who emailed me saying that she works with children with disabilities, and she's seen a great increase in the number of children on the autism spectrum. She said that she really would like to learn more about autism, and then also maybe some techniques or some different suggestions that could help her work more effectively with these children. She said they're very, very special children, very misunderstood, and anything that I could do will help. So thanks, Lynn. Sure appreciate the show's suggestion, and you're absolutely right. There really has been a significant increase in autism, and the more that we're actually learning about this disorder, or the spectrum as it's called, is the more that we're finding that while genetics certainly seem to contribute to the development of it, especially onset, what does occur is it appears that we are having a change in autism now, and that there's environmental factors such as heavy metal contaminations and pesticides, pollutants that are significantly increasing this risk in autism. In fact, prior to 1990, two-thirds of the children who were born with autism were born with something called onset autism, meaning that it developed during pregnancy or shortly after birth. And only about one-third had what was called regression autism, meaning that it developed between the ages of 12 months and 24 months. Now what we're finding is that trend is reversing, and we're actually seeing fewer diagnoses of onset autism, down as much of a third, and we're actually seeing the reverse, where we're seeing two-thirds of children becoming autistic in their second year. This change is really something that really has caused researchers to look at why has there, first of all, this change, and second of all, it certainly supports the concept that there's something that's occurring after a child has been born and that's causing this regression autism to surface. The speculation is due to, right now, what we're finding is pesticides, viruses, and the use of household chemicals, as careful as we are. Also, heavy metal contaminants in water. There's been research. Nothing's been finalized at this point in time, but it may possibly have to do with fluoride. And then the big controversial ongoing problem that we're finding is it may be the result of vaccinations. While this is really what I found in my own research, that's really what's alarming about autism, is the number of children that are being diagnosed with autism and how dramatically those numbers have increased over the last 15 years. For example, more than 3,000 children were diagnosed with autism in the state of California in 2006, compared to only 205 in 1990. There is something going on. What I'm going to be doing throughout the show is I'm going to be talking about autism. I'm going to be sharing how, as a medical intuitive, I see the metaphysics of autism and the beautiful gift that these children are here to teach us, and then also be offering some techniques to help, as Lynn requested, to help working with an autistic child to help them in the development of their brain functioning, that moving from hemisphere to hemisphere, and their ability to be able to learn to talk, which leads me to the next thing that I want to say, and I'm probably going to say it many, many times throughout the show, is autism, we're finding, is treatable. We're finding that many of the different techniques that are being used, we're looking at diet and the way that it's being used, and the way that it impacts the physiology, neurology of the brain and so forth. There are things that we're finding that are working, that children who have even been diagnosed with autism are actually able to change, reverse in some cases, the process so they're able to talk and then to socially interact with their outer environment. So, again, that's going to be what I'm talking about. I want to really emphasize throughout the show that this is really talking about autism from a metaphysical standpoint. I'm not going to be really touching on the conventional approach of autism, but I think that it would be of great value, especially when I started doing this research, that we look at autism from a different perspective, and that perspective is from a metaphysical perspective, and then also looking at it from the soul perspective. So what this really means is that while your child may be slower in their development or have more difficulty interacting in that social situation, in those environments, it doesn't mean that they're unhappy and that they're suffering. In fact, the children that we found in a lot of the research live very happy, productive lives and really have a very different way to see the world. And I think we can personally learn a lot from them. So I'm going to be talking about that. I'm also going to be I'm going to be taking your calls and sharing my medical intuitive skills. So if you have a question for me about today's topic, or you'd like to talk about your health, or you'd like to ask some questions about this energy that's going on right now, OMG, OMG, then you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in U.S. and for U.S. and Canadian callers. Also, international callers, just call 877-230-3062. I'd also like to invite you to join me for my free November Your Health teleclass. It's going to be taking place November 14th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The topic of this teleclass is Lyme disease. I received so many requests for this topic, and it really took a lot of time and research for me to become comfortable enough to really be able to look at Lyme disease from that metaphysical perspective. It's very clear how it impacts the energy body and how it impacts the chakra system and the origin site. But when I go in as a medical intuitive and really look at these different disorders, illnesses, and syndromes from a completely different perspective from that metaphysics, one of the interesting things I've found is, unlike many illnesses where we have a lot of different psychological contributors that are impacting the body prior to an illness developing, in the case with Lyme disease, I've found that it isn't so much what happens and is going on psychologically before Lyme disease and so forth, but what it is the psychological impact of Lyme disease and what you can do from a psychological perspective to aid in the healing of Lyme disease. The teleclass is 60 minutes long, and then what I'm going to be doing is sharing more of this epidemic levels of it. In fact, interesting new research shows that we thought that it was primarily Northern California. We know now it's in Southern California. We thought it's primarily on the East Coast. We're now finding that it's actually in the Midwest, and that's part of why we're getting this exaggerated number, this increase in the diagnosis of Lyme disease. But there's a real kind of dichotomy with Lyme disease, is that if it isn't diagnosed when it first appears, meaning that there's that telltale bullet target rash, or that there's those telltale signs that we're now associating with Lyme disease, then what happens is that it isn't diagnosed, and then as a result, by the time it is, the antibiotic regimen that conventional medicine uses really doesn't do the job, and as a result, people suffer from those lingering symptoms with Lyme disease. Other interesting information is that Lyme disease appears to affect women differently than men because of the way that our immune systems work. So I'm going to be talking about all of these things with Lyme disease. I'm also going to be sharing some of the conventional therapies. I'm going to be sharing some of the alternative therapies that we're finding are very, very effective in being able to manage the symptoms associated with Lyme disease, and in many cases, being able to prevent that Lyme disease from becoming chronic Lyme disease. And again, lots of controversy there. Many doctors believe that what happens is that Lyme disease affects the body, then it goes away. but we're knowing that isn't the case, and we're actually seeing more diagnoses of chronic Lyme disease. So all of that information in this 60-minute teleclass, of course, I'm not going to be able to cover every single thing. So what I do is, following the teleclass, there'll be a notification going out in email, which reminds me, if you're not in my email database, please go to my website, www.ritberger.com. Go to the contact page or contact on each of the pages that I have, get on my database mailing list, and then when the audio and printable PDF come out for purchase, then you can just go in, and we even have a try before you buy, so I'm going to tell you more about that as well. But again, 60-minute teleclass, it is free. You can register online on my website, www.ritberger.com. And again, that date is Wednesday, November 14th. At 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I hope that you will join me. The lines do get quite crowded, so if it's something that you are interested in, please register early, and that way it'll ensure you a spot on the teleclass itself. Well, I think that it's important, if we're going to be talking about autism, that we really start by defining it. And really what autism is, it's a developmental disability that typically involves delays and impairment specifically in social skills, language, and behavior. As a child's brain develops from conception through its early years, it gradually collects information, does it in the womb as well, and then creates its own perception of its outer world and starts forming what we call consciousness. This perception actually starts also developing a child's perception of their self boundaries. In the case of autism, rather than the self boundary expanding beyond themselves and their childhood, meaning those early months of development, it actually shrinks, affecting how the child interacts and communicates with their outer world. It actually forms an altered state of consciousness that provides the child all that they need in order to function and survive. What we're learning is that autism is actually tied to an autoimmune disorder, and that children with autism actually display intestinal yeast and fungal overgrowth, as well as high levels of metal contaminants in their blood and spinal fluid. They tend to be more acidic rather than alkaline in their body chemistry, and there seems to be a connection between autism and food allergies. Some of the most common causes that we are now discovering around autism, some of them are controversial, as I said, with the vaccinations, but specifically we're finding that the MMR vaccination, this is the measles rubella vaccination, tends to be that it, when we looked at the research, the children with autism, we found that there's evidence of the measles virus actually in the gut, the blood, and the spinal fluid. And also vaccines use mercury in many cases as preservatives. We know now that there's a lot of changes that are going on in not using mercury. A lot of times they're using an egg as a part of a preservative or part of the process of delivering the vaccine itself. And if the child has an allergic reaction to eggs, we're finding that that also could be a contributor. Excessive use of oral antibiotics, high levels of mercury exposure, such as mercury fillings, the consumption of seafood, these are primarily tied to the mother. It isn't about blaming the mother about what's happening and everything, but there are things that we're finding that are patterns that could specifically be the triggers for onset, meaning that the child is born with autism or develops it shortly after birth. The consumption of seafood and the contaminants in her body may also be affecting the child during pregnancy. A lack of essential minerals such as zinc, magnesium, iodine, lithium, and potassium. Heavy metals, specifically lead poisoning, lead is one of the number one culprits, causes an excess of ammonia waste in the brain itself. Pesticide contaminants, we are finding now, as we're looking at childhood illnesses, we're finding that these pesticide contaminants and these environmental pollutants and these household products that we're using, as safe as we try to be, could also be a significant contributor. Allergies and parasites, and then, as I mentioned, this yeast and fungal infection. One of the other things that we have found that's a common cause of autism, specifically in males, is that there's a family history of diabetes and alcoholism. So a lot of information. I'm going to continue to share this information as I move through the show, but let me jump in right now. I want to take Sally from Nelson, British Columbia. Hi, sweetie. How are you? Hi, Sally.
Hello.
Hi, how can I help you?
Ah, Carol, I have two daughters that have problems right now, and I wanted to ask your insight on them.
All right. They feel very close in age. Is that true?
2 years.
2 years, okay.
Yeah.
So why don't you point me in a direction? First of all, please just give me their first names.
Shannon.
Okay.
Shannon and Joanne. Shannon has breast tumors, non-malignant.
Right.
But persistent, and I've been working with her to try to help her release the pattern and get rid of them.
Okay. And then for Joanne?
She has two young children, quite young, and she's finding looking after them very, very stressful. She's crying a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. First thing off the bat is I'm going to do this energetically, kind of from that metaphysical perspective.
Okay.
Is Shannon feels to me that she's fighting her masculine energy.
Mm.
Nope, sorry. Shannon is fighting her feminine energy. Joanne is fighting her masculine energy. Let me explain what that means. And I immediately went that way because each of their souls said to me that what they're seeking in this lifetime is balance between their compassionate warrior. They're having a difficult time, each of them from a different perspective, how to be that compassionate being and how to be the warrior. Joanne is having a difficult time speaking up for herself, it feels like, being able to set some boundaries, being able to gain some control that she needs, and to be able to take those controls and put them into a process where she gets the support she's looking for. So with Joanne, I'm finding that her work on this earth is to work with that masculine energy and to find a way to express it in a healthy way for her so it doesn't create these highs and lows that are leading to some of the chemical changes, the hormonal changes that I'm picking it up in her. Then when I go to Shannon, Shannon feels like she's having a difficult time embracing her feminine energy. And what she feels like to me, sweetie, metaphysically and energetically is that Shannon feels where her separation, and it really isn't that, but I'm going to use that word, the separation is coming in her heart area, her breast area. It's kind of like her spiritual nature, that feminine energy that's tied to spirit, has this gap between her physicalness and her masculine energy. And her soul work is how do we bring those two together? How does she find heart? How does she express herself in her feminine energy, herself emotionally, instead of putting it inside and holding it inside, which for me, as a medical intuitive, fibrocystic breast disease, fibroids, also, there's some little bit of difference there in the density of the breast tissue itself, is those are toxic sites of different things over the course of time that we've held deeply inside from the standpoint of not bringing to expression. So what I have is with your girls is I've got a wonderful team, a duo between them, where Shannon can help Joanne and Joanne can help Shannon. But there seems like there's a communication barrier or something. It isn't that they don't care about each other. Is it distance? Is it something, family dynamics? Is it something from their past that's kind of keeping them where they're maybe not as reaching out as often as both of them would like?
I don't think I can really answer that. They do live apart, but they do get on the phone with each other, and they certainly do deeply care about each other.
They do, very, very much so. I mean, they are literally what I call twin flames.
Uh-huh.
And their work is to be of great service to each other. It just feels like for some reason there's such distraction, and that happens in life. There's such distraction that when each of them are at the place they're in right now, Shannon with her physical body, Joanne with her psychological aspects, they could be of great value in being able to help each other in that twin flame energy
there
to
be
able to work with each other.
There could be old family dynamics which talk about independence and make it on your own and not entering, not stepping into each other's concerns.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're just 100% correct with that. Now, I need to tell you that that is part of their soul agreement with each other. Their agreement with each other is to honor each other's space.
Right.
But when we reach cycles within our soul development, at this point in time, both of the girls could really use that good sister connection.
Okay.
And you, as the catalyst, could possibly reach out, you'll find your own expression, reach out to each of them to encourage them to not nag, but to encourage them to just kind of rekindle that bond that they have. They're both at a place right now on their life charts where they're asking for help, and the help lies within the two of them.
Okay.
They're wonderful mirrors. So anything that you can do to promote that, sweetie, that you can, you know, foster it or anything, that would be of great value. The interesting thing is that in this twin flames, both girls are actually experiencing immune system anomalies. They're not disorders. They're not illnesses or anything. But I pick up with Shannon is her immune system is almost attacking her soft connective tissue. It almost feels like Shannon is attacking herself. There's where Joanne's love can help her. It can say, hey, sis, come on, let's, you know, love thyself, whatever the word is. And then when I pick up on the side with Joanne with where she is with being overwhelmed and being emotionally fragile right at this point in time, I'm also picking up that it's tied to the immune system. Both of them are so stressed and pressed that I believe that this dynamics right now is to help them get back into the connection of their core values and what's important to them. And they have a very deep, soulful bond with each other. And if they can rekindle that, reconnect it, I think that it's going to help both of them tremendously.
Well, I certainly will encourage that. I'll be speaking with them both, and I'll invite them to listen to what you've just said.
Very good. And then the other thing is that if you could have both of them evaluate their diet, their eating patterns, their food combining, because when I find the immune system and I touch it, I find that each of them are really acidic in their small intestine. And I wouldn't be surprised if when the conversation, when we go in and we look at, and if you were to ask them, you know, do they have bloating? Do they have any of these different, you know, things that we associate with candida? I think that's exactly what we're going to find in both cases.
Okay.
So you could help in that way as well. This really feels to me, sweetie, like this is more soul work. It's the next stage in each of their development. They do mirror each other. They do honor each other, but they do need to reconnect.
Okay, perfect.
Good. Well, thank you very much for calling me.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm going to take. Oh, you are so welcome, sweetie. Hi, Elaine from California. How can I help you, hon?
Oh, hi. Hey, Carol.
Hi, honey.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You are welcome.
I also have a daughter, although much younger than your last caller, that I need you to just kind of help us figure out what's going on with her. She's been having off and on bouts of nausea.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, her little body kind of shook when she first felt it come on, and she calls it her swirl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure if it's emotionally based or if it's dietary or, you know, we just kind of need some help because she can't really tell us. She's six, but she's not sure what's going on either.
Yeah. First thing is, I'm going to tell you, I'm not picking up epilepsy.
Okay.
I don't know if that was a concern somewhere.
Well, the shaking has stopped, but
yeah.
I wasn't sure in the beginning what was going on. So.
Yeah. What it feels like is that it's something that she feels like she actually started developing probably around her 26th, 27th month of life, a little after 2 years old. And it feels to me like that was, at that point in time, was something called infantile spasms. And what it is it feels like it's tied to the nervous system impacting the muscle structure. That's why we were getting some of that shaking and so forth going on. I'm not tying it to a neurological disorder from the standpoint of epilepsy. You're right on target when you ask the question, does it have to do with diet? There's something that it seems like she, two things I'm picking up, honey. It's either something that she's eating and something that she's eating, but also I'm picking up that it has to do with the way she sits when she eats. I'm picking up spine. I'm picking up a little bit, it feels to me like a little bit of scoliosis, not bad, but there seems to be a little bit of a twist and turn when I hit that thoracic part of her spine. And it feels to me that the combination of sitting, if she sits and she sits a particular way, that what will occur is I think of it as kind of causing a short circuiting, meaning what the brain is sending isn't getting down to the bottom of her coccyx, the spinal cord, the way it needs to, and it's causing the shudder. So it's something.
So the shuddering has stopped. What's odd is, and honestly, this really only just began within the last month, and she's six. So for her to, I mean, for you to pick it up at an early age, I'm curious about that, you know.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't, what it feels like is it wasn't as obvious, and of course she couldn't talk about the nausea, but what it wasn't as obvious, but I can find her at that age, and not trying to program you, but I can find her at that age, specifically when she was sitting. There were times that she would kind of, look like she'd get rigid and maybe get a little bit kind of lucid, get kind of fixed in a place. And again, I just wanted to use that to kind of be the springboard for where she is right now. So from that particular standpoint, what we want to do is, you know, movement is good, maybe massage. Do you work with people with massage, honey?
Not specifically. I have in the past, but not recently and not with her.
Okay. She loves her hands rubbed.
Okay.
She loves her hands rubbed. Do you notice how she's such a touchy-feely little child with her hands?
She really is. And, you know, I really thought this might be emotionally based because she's been, you know, she's in first grade and she's just, it's starting in with, like, the, you know, the bullying. It's not really bullying per se, but it's a lot of emotional stuff.
Yeah, she is empathic. She picks up emotions very easily like you do. I mean, you're empathic as well. But one of the things is, as I was staying with the body, is that what we have is we don't have a problem. What we have is we have some things that we could do that could help her, specifically with the nausea. The nausea feels to me that it's tied to the vagus nerve, cranial nerve number 10. And what that is that is when she sits a certain way, holds her head a certain way, then it causes some compression on the spinal column, so the messages don't get down the way it needs to, comes down that cranial nerve, comes out the thoracic, which is stomach, lungs, and heart area. Nothing wrong with that area. It's just the feedback coming from the brain is going into that area, and I think that's causing some of the nausea. But there's some things. She loves her hands rubbed. If you, you know, to hold her hand, touch her hand, rub her hand, if you would kind of massage in the hand between her index finger and the thumb and that web part, just kind of rub it in there, you will stimulate the neurotransmitters. You'll stimulate the endorphins and the release of the neuropeptides, and I think that it'll change some of the chemistry of her body. So you can try those, you know, try that. Let me go back in. Her body, it wasn't her body. One of the things that you can do, and you'll have to use your skills of communication with this with her age, remember that she is a very, very old, old soul, sweetie. While she's in a six-year-old body, this is a very wise soul that came in this earth at this time, gracing this earth, to be able to hold the space of peace. That's her life work. Hun, that's your life work, isn't it?
I think so.
Haven't you always been the peacemaker? Haven't you always been the one that kind of holds the peace and holds the space for that?
I have, but I think I'm struggling with that too.
That's why she's here. She's here to help you, and you're here to help her. She's here to remind you that this can be a peaceful world, and it starts with ourselves by removing self-judgment. What your daughter's experiencing in her interaction with other people and her emotional sensitivity and empathic abilities connect is she's beginning to experience the judgment of others, and it makes no sense to her. It makes no sense to her. She isn't designed for self-judgment. We all, none of us are, but she really came on this earth to go, you know what? I may want to look at it and understand it, and gosh, look at Mom. She can help me at that, but I'm not going there. So I think the two of you can be really tremendously helpful to each other.
Okay. All right. I'm going to work on that.
Oh, well, you don't have to, because whenever you get too much, where you get to the point where she feels that little bit of resentment and anger, it's like, so what do you want to do, Mom? Shall we go do something else? She's just great. She's wonderful at distracting you.
Yes, that's true.
She keeps wanting you to do your timeouts, Mom.
Yes, that's true.
Anyway, I'm not picking up that there's anything really, really serious from a physical standpoint. Just some things, sweetie, that you could just do. Rub her shoulders, rub her head. Oh, my God, she loves her head, but her hands are first and foremost.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's so helpful. Thank you very much for all you do.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thanks for calling me. What I'd like to do is take a quick commercial break right now. I'm going to be back. I'm going to be talking more about autism and then also taking calls. I'll be right back.
How would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing. What color is your personality? Red, orange, yellow, or green? Now at Reitberger.com, Dr. Carol Reitberger, an international leader in the field of personality psychology, brings you everything you need to know about your personality. With Carol's innovative insights and personality assessment, you can finally live the life you desire, create more satisfying relationships, enjoy better health, and much more. So act now. Discover your personality color and find out about the personality colors of the people in your life, all at Reitberger.com. What you learn will change your life forever.
Welcome back, and if you're just joining me, the topic for today's show is actually a suggestion from a listener, which encourages me to invite you, if you have a show suggestion, to go to my website, www.reitberger.com, and go to radio shows. There's a suggestion button on the show schedule itself. Just send me a suggestion, and then what I'll do is I'll put it into the lineup of the different shows on topics that you want me to feature. I'll do some research on it and deliver it as I'm doing today. And today, the topic is on autism, and what I'm going to be doing is talking about some of the metaphysical perspective of autism, how as a medical intuitive I see it energetically. I do have time to take a couple more calls, so if you have a question for me about your health or about today's topic, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in U.S. and Canada. And then international calling callers, call your international calling code, and then 877-230-3062. If you want to learn more about autism, I actually have an audio and a printable PDF on the topic for purchase on my website, www.reitberger.com. Just put the cursor on the teleclass tab, click on the download, drop the downloads on the drop-down menu, and I even have a try before you buy feature so you can actually listen to a brief soundbite of the audio teleclass on autism and then also read a brief excerpt from the PDF on autism. In fact, I actually have in my teleclasses 28, I think it's actually over 28 different illnesses that I featured all in audio and PDF format. Also wanted to let you know that I do have a free audio PDF on breast cancer, as October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm going to talk a little bit about more about the metaphysics of it, but let's jump right in. Hi, Pam from Indiana. How can I help you, sweetie?
Hi. I have a question about my daughter. She's 27, and from the time she was born, she had all kinds of ear problems and food intolerances and just all kinds of stuff going on, and doctors could never really pinpoint what exactly was going on with her. But when she got older, we had her checked for arthritis and lupus because she has a lot of joint aches and pains and always has. But those all came back negative. And I was just wondering if you can tell me what's going on with her.
First thing I'm getting is Lyme disease. Where do you live, honey?
In Indiana.
Oh, Indiana. Okay. For some reason, I'm getting bacteria that's associated with Lyme disease that's carried by a lot of different things. Mosquitoes part of it. Black flies part of it. My sense is that what we have is we have the bacteria in her body. I keep testing a lot of different ways. I'm looking for viruses. I'm looking for, you know, the Epstein-Barr and everything. But I keep picking up this spirochete bacteria that basically is causing a lot of this kind of arthritic symptomology is what it feels like, where the immune system is actually feels like it's attacking and has over the course of her life attacking the soft connective tissue and the joints itself. So that's what I'm, you know, I'm not, let's see if I can do this. 5 years old. I can go back 5 years old is when I can start, when I can find that this started in her body.
Okay.
And it does feel like it has that bacterial component that's associated with Lyme disease.
Okay.
Would
that cause...
Go ahead, sweet.
Like intestinal problems or like diarrhea and bloating and things like that too?
It can. It actually doesn't cause it. But what it does is that that bacteria is kind of like a herpes virus from the standpoint, while it remains in the body, it can remain in a dormant state and in the perfect environment specifically tied to the gut, acidity, alkalinity, overgrowth of candida, which can be responsible for the bloating, can be responsible for diarrhea. Also, when I touch her gut, it feels like her gut feels dry to me, like it doesn't have enough mucus to be able to really function the way it needs to. So you might want to do a little bit of research on diet. You might want to do a little research on candida. It doesn't feel like the bacteria causes it. It feels like what happens in her gut that goes sideways on her creates the perfect environment for what I'm picking up with the bacteria to become active. Then I start finding this inflammatory reaction, and then I start finding what feels to me like flare-ups. Flare-ups where she has more discomfort. She's more aware of the joint aches and pain. She's more aware of the limitedness of the mobility that she has. So I refer to them as flare-ups where they actually come up, and she could be going along fine, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, it's like she hits a brick wall almost.
Right. That's where she's at right now.
Yeah.
And she has a 9.5-month-old baby, and her doctor told her it might have something to do with, you know, because she, it hasn't been that long since she gave birth and whatever with that. But she says, I don't think so, because she's always had these problems.
Yeah. Yeah, she really has. I do think that her body trying to stabilize from the hormonal imbalance that really is caused when we're pregnant. I do believe that it's, that's another part of the dynamics it isn't her being, you know, 9 months after birth. It's the fact that her body is hormonally trying to reestablish itself, mm-hmm. throws the gut off. It's trying to establish itself. The foods that she may be eating feels like they may be triggering some allergic reactions. All of these things are creating the perfect environment for the immune system to basically turn on the body. It doesn't mean to do that. It's designed to not do that, but to turn on the body in a way that it's creating this inflammatory reaction. And when that body gets into that state, everything either hurts or fatigue sets in, exhaustion can set in, and the thing that the body is saying in those things, even though it's difficult with a nine-month-old baby, is what the body is saying is, we've got to have some rest, we've got to have some right food, we've got to restore that, you know, balance in your mm-hmm. gut and so forth. And that's what her body's crying out for right now. It's just like, you know, whoa, we just need to take one thing. And the one thing, when I ask her body what that one thing was, is we need to focus on her gut.
Okay.
Right now, if she mm-hmm. focuses on her food, her gut, what she puts in her mouth, how she combines the food, eating foods too acidic, she's needing energy, it feels like she's increased her glucose, I'm finding some dynamics around gluten, not intolerant, but going on, we just need to focus on her gut. And I think what that will do is to restore that pH balance that's going to quell this kind of outrageous immune system that's going in and literally doing its job, trying to find anything, but it's wrecking havoc with her. And the symptomology she has at this point in time, if you want to do a little research, is tied to lupus. She does not have lupus, mm-hmm. but the symptomology she's experiencing at this moment feels to me that it's more in alignment with the symptomology of lupus.
Okay.
So there's some things we could do. Look at what the remedies could be with that.
Okay.
One of the things would be to put her on prednisone. But she doesn't want to do that. So I have to honor that. But that would stop the inflammation right away. The issue is mm-hmm. they would want to keep her on it for a long time, and that won't solve the problem.
Okay. We've really thought that we were still thinking she has lupus. You know, I know it takes a lot. It takes sometimes a lot of tests for that to show positive. But I have a sister with lupus, and you know, with the symptoms my sister has, and then we compared them with my daughter, and it's like it mimics the same.
Yeah,
but
it does. But honestly, I just have to say it the way it feels. And you know, I don't have to be right, but I really am always concerned about accuracy. When I run her body mm-hmm. with lupus, I can get symptomology, but I can't energetically get enough symptomology to say this is what it is. And I think that's where the doctors are, because I honestly do not believe that's what it is.
Okay, now if we get her tested for Lyme, will they be able to tell if that's in her system?
There are some labs that specialize in that. I think if we went to conventional medicine, especially mm-hmm. the doctor that she works with, I don't think, honestly, the test will come up decisive enough.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with that, sweetie, very honestly, is that if you do find that, conventional medicine will put her on antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Antibiotics is going to compound this small intestine gut issue. Antibiotics
okay.
are very helpful. They boost the immune system so it stops running around like a little screamy Mimi. But what mm-hmm. it does is it changes the entire dynamics of the small intestine. I would encourage her to get off of gluten for a while, to get off of sugar, to eat complex carbohydrates, eat as close to nature. She does appear to have a natural flavoring or an MSG. Allergy as well. I don't know if she's aware of that. So we want to get her back as pure and clean as possible, and maybe look at supplements such as fish oil, some krill oil might do well. I'm picking up magnesium. I'm picking up a B12. There's some things I'm actually picking up there that would
okay.
help with that gut.
Okay. That's
good.
Like a good place to start. start.
Well, thank you. And, I mean, it's not to discourage you on getting the testing to find out this by any mm-hmm. means, but it's just that if you're going to do a little bit of research, honey, and look for labs mm-hmm. that specialize in the testing for Lyme disease, because they've refined it to the point that they can find the bacteria either when it's active or inactive.
Okay.
And so you'd have to do a little research, and I think then you would start to find your answers.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You are so welcome. I want to jump in and let's talk just very briefly about the metaphysical aspect of autism. I do have another caller on the line. I'm going to try my darndest to get to you. But metaphysically, autism is an altered state of consciousness, as the medical intuitive I see it, where the child's inner world literally becomes their outer world. In this inner world, they're able to interact with others, to carry on conversations, and even communicate through speech, but it's all done internally. From their perspective, there's really no problem, as they really rely on those vivid imaginations to be able to formulate their thoughts and feelings and to use those imaginary friends or the people in their life and use the imagination as if they were sitting and having a conversation and interacting with you. They tend to be highly gifted in their use of intuition, and they rely on the prefrontal lobes. This is the home of the sixth sense, to collect information via vibes. I call it hypersensitive, and communicate that information intuitively to their right frontal lobe, where they translate it into pictures and symbols. In their world, in that right frontal lobe, there's no needs for words, which is left frontal lobe, in order for them to communicate, because they actually believe that they are communicating more telepathically and through their eyes than through their mouths. One of the things with autistic children that we learn is that there's a natural tendency in that outer world social structure that they don't want to look us in the eyes. So a lot of the different techniques is to help the child focus on looking at our eyes. From their standpoint, they are. They're looking at you. They're looking at your eyes. They're looking at you. They're communicating with you, and they're touching your soul. So again, there isn't any need for words to come out. It's almost as if I found working with these children is they're reminding us to listen to our hearts and to use our intuition more for guidance than relying on words to tell us what to do or other people's words to tell us what to do and to be able to offer other people's opinions and expectations and so forth, which basically causes us to get into that area of self-judgment, and then in that area we get into suffering, and then what we do is we find ourselves in the pattern looking outside for the answers. These children are happy, they're very self-sufficient, and they're not to be felt sorry for. I mentioned this in the first segment, I want to do it again. Instead, we should be looking at them as our teachers and cherishing them for being in our lives. I know we do, and I've worked in so many cases with working with autistic children, with the parents, and it's very hard for us as parents to watch our child not be able to interact, and we suffer from that, and that we forget, we go into that fix-it mode, and we basically forget the beautiful gift that they offer in our lives and the fact that they're here for a reason. I believe that's to remind us of what's really important, to teach us how to enrich our lives through the use of our imagination. Seems to go away as we get older, until you reach an age when you're older, when all of a sudden it comes back. That's one of the good things about the aging process, and what it is to help us remember also that we're going to find our answers inwardly instead of outwardly. As a medical intuitive, I see the lights of an autistic child's mind being more active in the right hemisphere of the brain and in the medulla oblongata, the brain stem, that tangled web of nerves and neurons and the way that it interacts, which is the home of the reticular activating system, the part of the brain that's highly sensitive to patterns and that serves as a keen observer of our outer world experiences. The part of the brain with the least activity is the temporal lobe of the left hemisphere, which is the language center that forms sentences. Actually, it brings up words. It forms sentences, and it's really part of the cognitive development skills that are needed for social behavior. One of the things I've also found with autistic children is they do tend to have a lot of energy in their heart area. They tend to be happy, and they are very accepting of themselves. Energy in this area reveals that their inner child is happy, healthy, has no judgment. They don't really see anything wrong. And that I found that as I work with these children, that they have very healthy self-esteems, something, again, I think as adults we can learn from. They also have a great sense of play, and they enjoy activities that are social in nature, even though they may not socially interact the way that we expect them to. They do enjoy social activities, and that can help them in maturing that social behavior because of the interaction with working with the children. One of the things that I found that works very well that in working with the brain patterning with working with autistic children is working with a metronome. That's that little clock that we go tick, 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 tick that we use a lot of times when we're learning the piano, because what that does is that tick, tick, tick actually synchronizes itself to the heartbeat that then causes the hemispheres of the brain to start to stimulate the neurotransmitters, the neurosynapses with the neurotransmitters, and getting both hemispheres to talk. Some of the other techniques that work with autistic children is sign language. That doesn't mean that you're supporting them not talking. It's just an easy way to be able to communicate, and they love working with their hands. Pointing to pictures and symbols, and then you say the word and then have them touch the picture. What this does is it actually serves as a tactile stimulus. Encourage the child to sing with videotapes or audio tapes. Don't worry about how the words sound, as it's going to help the neurological detours in the part of the brain that is malfunctioning around autism to be able to develop. One of the things we know with neuroplasticity is that we actually can create not only new brain cells, but we can create new neural pathways in the brain. So get them to sing, allow them to sing, and better yet, why don't you sing along with them, and then they can use your voice as guidance. And what it does is for us as adults is singing really causes us to breathe. It's a wonderful stress reliever, and it gets back to our childhood soul part to where we can just have a darn good time. Use motion stimuli such as swinging on a swing while teaching speech. Again, this stimulates different parts of the brain. Use computer software specifically designed for children with developmental issues, and we have new software that's being developed for autism, the autism spectrum. Focus on their natural talents and creative balance. Focus on their natural talents and creative activities that are going to bring those talents into expression, such as a musical instrument or art. I worked with a beautiful little girl, 4 years old, autistic, no speech at all. But what she would do is whenever I would talk to her, she would reach for my box of crayons because she loved to color when we were working together, and she would draw me pictures of what that she was looking at, and she was absolutely exquisite in drawing pictures of animals, and she loved that. And what I would do is I'd say, oh, well, that's a dog, and she actually would look at the pictures that she had drawn, and she would point to dog. So there's some things that we can do there. Use what they're fixated on as a means of learning. If they're fixated, I had one young man that was autistic. He was actually fixated on Native American Indians. And what he did is anytime he would come and work with me, as I was working in person at the time with him and his parents and also his siblings, he always came with a book on Native Americans. What we did over the course of time is then he would come with his drum, he would come with his rattles. His mother helped him make his drum. He actually decorated the way that he needed to. And what we did in our sessions is we actually would have the parents ask him questions, starting with yes or no, and he would actually use the drum to express yes or no. So there's things that while we see them as being fixated on it, use them as learning tools because they really, really go a long way. And what we found with this particular young boy is that as he's now, he is a teenager. He's actually, I think he's going to graduate from, he's a senior this year. He actually is specializing in the studies of Native American culture and is going to go on to college in order to become an expert and potentially to be able to help in bringing that culture back into expression. Interesting. He now has more words. So wonderful, wonderful things that we can learn from these children, wonderful things that these children can help us remember. I think this is part of the reason, honestly, I find kind of looking at these staggering numbers that's associated with autism, one of the things that I seem to find over and over again in these large numbers is perhaps they're talking and perhaps they're saying to us, shh, listen, be mindful of your words. Don't just yammer, 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 but be very mindful, thoughtful of those words and how those words are impacting you, and are they triggering self-judgment? If they're triggering self-judgment, then what you want to do is stop those words, be quiet, go into silence. I'm being told to go into silence. And then what you do is then you will actually hear your heart and you will hear your true voice and you will find the answers you're seeking. Fascinating topic, fascinating way to look at it. Excuse me, fifth chakra. I must have some silence work going on there. Interesting topic. Interesting information. Thank you so much for the suggestion, Lynn. I hope that it's touched all of you at a very deep level. It can also help you remember what's very important. Light to love and all of you. Have a wonderful week. I'm going to see you next Wednesday on the radio. Light and love. Joy to all of you. Find those words that speak your truth. Bye.
You've been listening to the Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com. See you soon.